From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. Meet Boots. I've been up all night, I'm sure you think you might have seen this one or heard it from some other kind of stranger in the line. Boots is the most interesting new artist I've heard in 2015. I first discovered his sound on the FKA Twigs record. That record is so filled with an ever-fascinating warped and twisted sound. You may have first encountered Boots on Beyoncé's self-titled 2013 record. He wrote and produced songs for that record. This year, All Songs Considered premiered Boots' self-directed short film / music video called Motorcycle Jesus, complete with 5 brand new songs by Boots. And I just recently heard his yet-to-be-released album, Aquaria. The mix of sounds on that record range from Bowie and Trent Reznor to hip-hop and ambient. The sound felt so original, I felt compelled to talk to him. So, meet Jordy Asher, a.k.a. Boots, and we'll discover what makes his debut album, co-produced by LP from Run the Jewels, my most anticipated release for 2015. Boots was in Los Angeles at NPR West when we called him up. But there are a couple things on this record that fascinate me. One is that it feels incredibly meticulous. Like, all the sounds seem... I'm an electronic musician, been doing it since my ARP Odyssey in the late 70s. So all the sounds feel really precisely chosen. And then the other thing that happens is that it feels completely organic. Like, there's something, you know, there's a bunch of people in the room and they're playing. So I want to explore that for a minute. And I want to play... can I play a little bit of Brooklyn Gamma?
Yeah, sure.
And maybe you can just describe... like how the song came together.
Yeah, I would love to.
Chest. My best day is your worst day. Worst day is my best phrase. That's just what I get. Rope squeezing my neck. Things I forget. Lost in my hotel room. Ocean on swing back soon. That's what we get. Flies licking my face. All bags are closed off in this race. Break ground, start again. Break ground, start again. Get what we can get. Poison on my plate. I love it all the same. This hand's on my wrist. In the form of a fist. In the form of a kiss. Light up.
So I'm going to get to the end of the song a little bit because it goes through some nice changes. But why don't we talk about just how this came to be? What's happening? Is it something you worked on a laptop? And
no,
or is it
no.
A bunch of,
okay, well, yeah, you know what? There's 3 aspects to the song.
Okay.
The first one started where we were in France. We were recording in the, and by we, the touring band I was with, which had 2 drummers in it. And we first set up that kind of dueling drums facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Thing that was happening, a lot was happening and coming from spontaneous jams or us together in a room making things. And I'm very inspired by rhythm, inspired by beats. And in France at La Fabrique, it's an enormous chateau, and you know, the people who own it collect
collections of what?
Oh, more books, more records, more videotapes, old film reels, just so many things you couldn't even believe. And we went upstairs above the studio, and it was this kind of wing of the studio that they hadn't finished yet. We found this really old film editing machine. I'm thinking 1920s, 1930s, just steel. And laying next to it was this big steel canister, aluminum canister, whatever it was. And we brought drumsticks up there and we started hitting whatever we could see, whatever we could find. We found this canister and took it apart. And on one side, it fit perfectly on the hi-hat stand. So the top of it was a real hi-hat. The bottom of it was this metallic canister. And then the other one fit perfectly on top of the tom. When I say perfectly, the exact dimension of the tom we were using. And the sound that you're hearing is the drum beat is a live beat, and it's that clanking, clattering sound is that film canister on top of the drum.
Is that this?
Yep.
Let's listen a second. It ain't as good as it gets if you got holes all over your chest. I think that's that may be to the organic nature of what's happening here. So,
yeah,
it is unfolding for you as it is unfolding for me as a listener in some ways.
Yeah, and we when you put things like that on the drums, it causes you to play differently. We all started messing around and coming up with beats just because of this setup, and recorded 15 minutes of different variations of this, and I just put it on loop for 15 minutes and. We thought, okay, well, there's the really organic aspect of it, how we get the cold future aspect of it, you know, the one that is computers and the one that is processing. And,
right.
And made kind of the background noises and sent those noises into different reverb chambers, et cetera, and really just trying to make a world unto itself with organic and with... with futuristic computer... unemotional sounds.
The song's called Brooklyn Gamma. Did the words form in the studio? Did words something you had hanging out?
No, I was mad that day. I was not happy.
It sounded like a great place. What's the deal, Boots?
No,
you're in a chateau in France in a recording studio with all these objects. Okay,
and then you are. Putting a mirror up in front of yourself and finding the deepest, darkest corners you can go to and seeing how far you can take them. And it's bliss on one end because it's something you always wanted, but there's no distractions and you actually go, okay, well, what is down there?
Yeah.
There's a couple things on the record that when you find them, it's sometimes an unnerving truth to know that that existed inside of you.
Cut open the clone who's, what is it, wearing?
All of my clothes.
All of my clothes. Well, that's just what I get. You have this rhythm going. The rhythm's on loop, I'm imagining. Do you stick on headphones and start writing and start talking, singing?
I started doing that in the room while we were playing the beat. I was, you know, if you solo out the drum tracks, you'll actually hear me in the room saying those words or even more, three or six or seven verses somewhere that I was just saying free association while we were there. And it's, for me, sometimes just about reining it in and finding what the most direct way to say it is.
There's hands on my wrist in the form of a fist. Mm. Great words. I like what happens in the song as the song takes shape. This is still, we're still on the only opening cut, Brooklyn Gamma. So let me just play a little bit more of Brooklyn Gamma, where this goes, and maybe you could talk a little about the what feels like release. You tell me.
One of my favorite moments on the entire record is right there.
Wait, which part, the little ending or the? The
I love the little ending.
Yes, I do too. But was that what you were
the release?
Yeah, the release. How'd that come to be?
It was a 10-minute thing that I was working on, and I kind of whittled it down to 3.5 minutes or whatever it was. But it never had a release. It never, and I knew that. I loved the idea, but I didn't know where it was supposed to land. And LP, came out to Los Angeles when I was in the stages of trying to whittle down the track list, and he heard it, and he said, you have to bring it to the next level. And that was his coercion. he brought that out of me, and I nearly broke my finger because I was hitting the guitar so hard when I was playing that part that it was just, and it felt real. And Carla of Autolux,
the drummer,
came in and played that at the end. This incredible beat at the end. It felt, in the time that it took to listen to it, was exactly how long it took to create it.
Wow.
It was intense, and it was guttural, and we didn't turn back and do it 100 times. We did it when it felt right, and that was it, and just let it go.
When something like that comes together so quickly, isn't it amazing to come and listen back to it and realize that that's all that happened? In other words, when you work on something, it's not as satisfying, at least I don't think so, as when something happens that it's so magic and it just comes together, and then you sit back and listen.
It's really what I strive to do. It's what I live for, because I am meticulous and I am detail oriented, and I hear every single sound all at once. And believe it or not, at any time during the record, there's only three things sonically ever happening. And if something new is introduced, something else takes its place.
How do you mean?
Or leaves. Or if there's a guitar playing, and then, you know, it's a guitar, drums, and a bass. If a new instrument comes in, then one of those three will drop out. One of those three will no longer be there, but you never felt it happen.
And that's true for this whole record?
Yep.
I never noticed that. So yeah. It keeps it spare in some ways, right?
Yeah, vocals are the fourth, but that's my exception to the rule.
That's very cool. Now, when you think about music, you just explained how that song came together, and it was just really, off the cuff's not quite the word, but inspired in the moment. Do you hear... You ever go in a studio and hear in your head something you just want to execute, and the act of going to a studio is an execution?
Yes.
And are there any songs on this record that are that?
100%.
Oh. Wait a minute. All of the songs you feel like you had in your head before you walked in the room?
In some shape or form, yeah.
Wow. Let's walk through one.
And I, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I knew how I wanted it to unfold. I knew how I wanted the record to unfold. And sometimes you go in and you hear it in your head and you get it wrong. Sometimes, you know, I have to do more so now than ever, because when I first started out making music and recording and all that, I would just, oh, it's great. There it is, leave it. And it wasn't always the case. Maybe I could have spent more time. Maybe I could have done this. Or.
Oh, but that's always true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially in this day of music and these tools that we have, it's always true. But keep going.
And it's easy. It's easy to George Lucas the shit out of something.
I'm going to steal that line.
Just re-release it and don't tell anybody that you changed everything that you loved about it. No, it's better now. Yeah. So, you know, it's easy to think that, yeah, it could have been better, but I really feel that this time I did everything I could to make sure I got exactly what I was hearing. And I did, you know, Oracle Eyes, I did three versions of it until I finally landed on the one that I was trying to make.
Well, let me play a little of that, and then maybe you can tell me what it was that used to be there, if you can do that. Yeah.
X's on my eyes, hexes on my satellite, oracle eyes. Hexes on my phone, all your drones are made of stone, oracle eyes. Get the car keys. Robin Hood.
I love the way it so spare, and boy, when that beat comes in and everything else, it, you say there's only three elements, but it's the kitchen sink. It's the kitchen sink of bottom end too. It's really beautiful.
Thank you. It's my favorite thing, and to work on his bass, it was a mystery to me for a while, and I felt somewhere along the line that it just clicked, and I understood it, and it understood me, and it is just now second nature.
Could you dig a little deeper for someone who, let's say, who's not a musician, mm-hmm. but who listens to bass and likes bass, and we're in a day and age where there are speakers that produce bass a lot better than when I was making music or when I was listening to music, and so bass is much more a part of music than it used to be because you can actually hear it.
Yeah.
But talk about that, coming to terms with it.
There's a lot of new ways to hear music, and the race for bass now is very real, and people want to have the best sounding bass. They want to figure out new ways to get past the limitations that we have. And that's always been the case, where Paul McCartney wanted to make the Beatles bass sound like Motown bass, and he would get upset because, you know, back then on a record, if it's too much bass, the needle would jump out of the groove.
That's right.
And he would say, but Motown has three times as loud of bass as we do, and it's three times more dialed in. Why is ours still jumping out of the groove? So it's always been, in some ways, the future is to get that bass in a new way that you haven't heard it before. I think we achieved that on the Beyoncé album in a really great way. I think it's something I try to strive for in everything that I do. It's tough because the louder your bass gets, the more everything around it shrinks and will sound tiny and small. And the challenge is making sure that you can feel it, because that's what bass does the best. I've seen videos of people who are deaf who are listening to death metal and have their feet on the speakers because it's their favorite music, because they can feel it through mm-hmm. their body. And I think that's why something like bass can go across every single different kind of music and appeal to every different kind of person in some way, because it's really one of the sonic signals you can feel in your body.
And it's one you don't hear much in human nature, so it mm-hmm. really stands out when you hear it. But it also is, like you say, it's kind of, for people more visually oriented, it's like turning a light up really, really bright. The louder the bass, as you say, other things just vanish.
Yeah.
And you can't see. It's like the sunlight in your eye. And yeah. So the trick of what you do is to make the bass prominent without burying, in your case, the voice or the guitar, and keeping everything clean. So tell us your secrets.
Trickery. It's all trickery.
It's all trickery.
It's all sonic trickery.
That's right.
Brooklyn Gemma starts off well below the meter to get you to turn it up. And by the end, we're at standard volume. But you've already turned it up.
Yes.
It's your fault for believing that I wasn't going to scare the shit out of you.
Yeah, I like when records do that. There's over the years and over the ages, lots of records that do that, where they start off, it might sound like an AM radio, where they've pulled out all the bottom end completely, so you go, oh, that's not very loud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a yeah. good... you got it. So the words in Oracle-ize, O-R-A-C-L-I-E-S? I don't even... Tell me about that word and what the song is.
I just made a word up from two different words and put them together.
Is that true of the album title, Aquaria? Is that a word?
No, it's not. I make up a lot of words on this record. My favorite in Cure is millions is. That's my favorite new word.
It seems like it's a word.
I remember when I was in school, and the way for measurement of how many galaxies there were, they said, there's 100 billion billion galaxies. And I'm going, that's not a number.
Yes.
That's the only way we can describe it, to make you understand how many that is. And so... You know, millions is a foreign concept for me and for a lot of other people. So why not just make it sound ridiculous?
Where was school? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Miami.
What were you listening to when you were talking about billions and billions of stars in Miami?
I came up being ragged on from my older brother because I loved hip-hop. and he was into ska, and I didn't have time for that.
Well, tell people who, what is it about ska that, did you make you crazy, or did...
A little bit.
It's incessant.
Yeah, and I have a line in the sand that I draw for music that feels like it doesn't take itself seriously. I remember friends of mine would create joke songs, and I would be really, really irrationally upset. Just, how are you making a fake song? Because I was trying really hard to make something great. It's funny sometimes to do, but, you know, ska was something that I felt, besides early ska, and, you know, have since been educated on the great side of it. But during that time in the 90s, it just all felt like a joke that I wasn't in on.
I like that. Were you trying to make music as, let's say, a 15-year-old?
Oh, yeah.
And tell me how you were trying to do that.
I was a break dancer, and we had a very limited access to breakbeats. We had the same record that we spun over and over and over again. And I remember, and this was when I was about 12 or 13, I thought I could do that if I just play the drums. And I had this weird image in my head of me playing drums and them breakdancing to it is where it started. And that went from finding an 808 for $40 in Miami.
For those who don't know, an 808 is a Roland drum machine from
the legendary middle 808.
Yes, middle 80s. Yeah.
I mean, it's every sound. I mean, the 808 is now... It's commonplace in every music you hear, that low bass drum. Mm-hmm. And started making and sequencing beats on that, and then simultaneously picked up a guitar and started learning how to write songs and play, and spiderwebbed into a much bigger thing where the technology, the traditional songwriting, the traditional music, finding things like the Velvet Underground and Nico and things that spoke to me in a different way that hip-hop didn't, but, you know, appealed to this broader side of me. It's all informed me now to make what I make now.
Trying to guess your age, I'm gonna pinpoint that you were 15 in 2004, 2003.
I mean,
that'd be close.
Maybe I don't even know that.
So how many?
No, I'm 28 now.
You're 28, so I was right. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. So you're born in 88.
87.
So you're 87. So you're mm-hmm. 15. Yeah, it's 2002, 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. And then did you go the laptop route? Did you, like, buy?
No, I was very poor and did not have the means to have a laptop.
But you found an 808 that in 2003, that couldn't have been completely cheap.
$40.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice work.
Thought it was a kid's toy.
Wow.
And I went, yeah, that's my sister's going to love that.
Sister ever see it?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
No.
Were you just recording on like a four-track that you also found in this?
No, I was recording on a tape recorder. Even from when I was a young kid, I had a boombox that you could record on. Mm-hmm. And then I found those really cheap tape recorders, like the Detective tape recorders. And I found out that you could open them up and you could break them, so to speak, so that they could just multi-track. So you could keep recording over a tape over and over and over and over again, and it wouldn't erase what you had recorded. So I started making very strange pieces around then.
What's a Detective tape recorder? Hang on a minute.
It's one of those old school that has the built-in speaker, built-in microphone.
So it's a cassette machine, yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
cassette tape recorder.
And then you just, what do you put, like scotch tape or something? Or did you, cause that's how we used to do it.
Yeah, on the tape.
Put scotch tape on the tape head so you'll only erase part of the tape.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in your case, you did it.
You can open it up and you can do it inside, too.
Gotcha. Do you have any of that music still?
Yeah, I have boxes of tapes.
Do you like it still?
I'm rooting for him. Rooting for him to get better.
Good. So when do you think you found your voice? What was it that... I'm assuming, because I like this record so much, that you have in fact found your voice. So I'm going to say that.
Thank you. Yeah. Shit, it was a long time coming. I think I found it on this record more than ever. I think I was close on Motorcycle Jesus, and I think that everything for a while that I was releasing The mixtape was something that, it's why it's a mixtape, it was something that was very scattered and very, I had to draw a long line from the Beyoncé album back to myself and the music that I wanted to make. And most of that was things that I had either created with another artist in mind or had created just, you know, in a moment of inspiration. So there's about three albums working in that one mixtape, and it's a lot of ideas.
This is Winter, Spring, Summer, Fall. Can I play something from the Top Cut? I'm going to play the opening thing. I'm going to play a little bit toward the end of the first song.
Sure.
This is A Day in the Life of Jordan Asher, whoever that might be.
Touch my own back, and everywhere I go now, people try and get they shine. I keep saying, don't worry about it, I get mine. Yeah, let's see how long that works now. Bedford Ave, it was a little cold out. I heard screaming, commotion, a fight broke out. 20-year-old kid fell on the tracks. Joshua Bazin, I held you till you died. I didn't know you, I met you that night. You couldn't breathe, I said you'd be alright. I'm sorry that I lied. Is it just me or are these lives too precious? It's not worth it to be acting so reckless. We're just drifting through space anyway. Maybe we'll wake up someday.
Hey, it's me.
Now, I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. I don't know Joshua. Mm-hmm. But that is chilling. And that is a story which has truth in it, more than just truth in it.
Yeah.
And how do you put that to a song? And what did that incident on the train, which was where? Was that
Bedford Ave station, yeah.
The Bedford Avenue station in Brooklyn. What does that do to you?
A lot happened. I felt like a cloud or a fog in front of my eyes kind of got lifted when I saw that happen, where He didn't wake up that day thinking that that was going to happen.
That's right.
He didn't wake up expecting that to happen. And above all, he didn't deserve it, because he wasn't the one who started the fight. It was a racist person who started calling him names on the other train and started a fight with him. And Joshua was victim to it, where the other person got off the tracks and ran away. And I remember a lot of things that I thought were important stopped mattering to me. That just seemed fleeting or unnecessary. And I remember the focus was just that, you know what, we have such limited time here, and no one ever knows anything for certain or anything for sure. And it doesn't matter how great you are as a person or how kind you are as a person, it didn't stop something terrible from happening to him when he didn't deserve it. So I think that it resonated in a very deep way with me, where I felt like I had to memorialize him in some way, and I had to love him in some way where people can walk by and if they didn't see it and if they weren't there, it can disappear, and it won't ever disappear from my mind. So I felt that I wanted to respect him in that way.
Well, it really works. And there seems to be, and tell me if I'm wrong, a theme throughout the new record that has to do with, well, appreciating life.
Hmm.
Am I reading too deep into that?
No, you're absolutely right. The first half, I needed it to feel like you're bashing yourself against the walls, and after a while, you can only do that for so long, and you have to look out and see what else is out there, and whether or not you're going to create your own future, if you're going to create your own new world. And that's what Aquarius to me is. It's a time to create our own as the race, or in a personal level, or in any way that we can, is to take that into our own hands and create something new and something positive out of it.
Let me play a little bit of it. It's the title track.
Chevrolet,
Lust is boring, old man sure, and holy rollers on a hearse. Shake like a gamma ray, Mississippi, Alabama state. Trust I must to quake through the crust at your Bible, swinging dicks reverse. Inspecting every flight delay, bombing down the motorway. Your stripes and stars can lay pipe on Mars. Cause sitting pretty pays slow. Infect me with your hate. Gate for heaven's gate. Tell God my city it's starting to sink and it's starting to stink, so let it go.
Do you want to tell people a little bit about the words, what's going on here? What's the flip? What when you describe
it,
the...
It is a sick and demented glee. It is a party track. It's my version of We Will Rock You. I wanted a beat that everyone could bang on a table, because I haven't heard one of those in a long time, mm-hmm. since maybe Grindin' by the Clips. And I wanted something that was a celebration in the idea of us taking our world back. And, you know, it's so much shit that you get hit with or that you hear wall to wall every day that I felt like it was just time to say, nah, that's it. That's enough for us. And I think that now more than ever, we have the tools and we have the ability to take our world back and make the one that we want to make.
And lyrically, is there a phrase that you think sums that up? Is it in the chorus? Is it
rings getting pried off, king's gonna die off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let me just play a little more. Flexing every ounce of muscle, is that what she said? Holding up the ceiling with pillars of destruction. I know that voice. That voice is, speaking of Brooklyn, it's
from... Angel DeRozan.
Right, from, of course, you're right, but from...
used to be in Dirty Projectors and Slasher Flicks.
Yeah, Dirty Projectors, indeed. Great. She has such a voice, and it's so distinct. How do you two know one another?
We have mutual friends, and I had an idea for this song when I first started out that didn't fully come to fruition, so I had to change gears really quick and say, okay, what is the most direct way we can do this? And the imagery and the idea of oracles and visions coming to you from out of nowhere is a place I operate in a lot, whether it's I'm falling asleep and have a song idea and have to drag myself out of bed to make it happen, or I'm, you know, in any kind of state and just that moment hits and I have to grab it. And it always feels like just some other being coming out of the smoke and whispering it to you. And I gave her that directive. I said, you know, you're the oracle that comes out of the dust or out of the haze. And you have to say it in a way that is beautiful and poetic, but in a way that really connects. And she nailed it. His first shot nailed it.
That's so great. What do you want music to do for you when you listen to something or when you make something? What do you want it to do to you? What do you want your music to do to a listener?
I want it to fucking move people, man. I want people to be excited again. I want people to remember what it's like to experience music that hits them emotionally. And I've just felt like there's a big piece of it that's missing from modern music, where I haven't felt excited about something in the same way that I have as frequently as I have in the past. And it's not because I'm getting older, and it's not because of anything except... sometimes I feel like people take less chances, and it still happens. And when it does happen, I'm always so grateful for it when I hear something incredible that moves me. That's what I want it to do. I want people to be touched by it in a way that it's just, you can't even wrap your head around it. You go, oh my God, and you have to listen to it 10, 20 times and hear something new, the same way that I did when I experienced new music that I fall in love with.
Do you remember something as a kid that did that to you that you hold on to forever? Is that, oh, I remember that moment.
Yeah, Illmatic by Nas did that for me, mm-hmm. in a big way.
How old were you?
I was 12, mm-hmm. 11 or 12.
Heard it where and home? Friends?
A friend of mine across the street had been telling me about it, and he was a big reason why I got so heavy into hip-hop. And I had a close relationship with my grandmother, and she would buy me a CD or a record, or and always at her suggestion, you want to go to a record store. She loved doing it. He'd been telling me about Illmatic, and she bought me that CD. And I had never heard anything like it before. I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know you could say that. And then as a songwriter, young songwriter, David Bowie and the Beatles, it just felt like every single time it was just connecting, every single time. And then you grow, and then you learn, and then you even can hear that stuff as an adult and still find new things about it, which is why music is so special and why it's so important.
Well, hold on to that. Never let go of it. Mm-hmm. I love this record, and thanks for doing it.
Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. Boots, his debut album, Aquaria, comes out on Columbia Records November 13th. For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered. Maybe you should be-